Welcome to the Black History Toolkit podcast with Abu Bakr Madan Al-Shabazz. Support the channel by subscribing and also making a donation via Patreon or buy a cup of coffee on Ko-fi. See the links below. You can also find out more by visiting the website abubakrmadan.me.
So we're going to look at the last major migration now of dark-skinned people during the Windrush. So here, males as well as females came over in 1948. And what I want to look at is before that particular period comes, there was a large amount of dark-skinned troops from West Africa, East Africa, and from the so-called West Indies, who actually helped in the war effort. Now, this image was taken in 1915. A few Blacks in Britain formed a permanent Black community. So there was already Blacks living in Britain, places like Sheffield and Liverpool and Cardiff. Yeah, so this is important. So we even had certain ones in like places like Merthyr Tydfil working in the mines. They weren't a large demography, but they were there nevertheless. During World War I, several thousands were brought to Britain to do the work that would free Britons for combat service. So many Black people were brought over under the British Empire in order for white men to be sent out to fight the war against the Germans on the Western Front. So now we see another migration of dark-skinned people coming in here at the turn of the 20th century. And here you've got the West Indian troops serving on the Western Front of Somme, and this is in 1916. Even though you see the image of them then giving guns, they didn't really want them to combat. That was just a picture taken. These Black troops were there to dig the trenches and to polish the boots and to wash the clothes of these white soldiers. This needs to be understood. And this is why, to a large extent, some of this is brushed to the ground. And when many of these soldiers came back to places like Cardiff and Caddiston and Newport, etc., you know, because they may have had brothers or wives in these particular areas, yeah, race riots actually erupted. Similar thing took place in America, known as Red Summer, in 1919. What was happening in 1919, where Black men with uniform were deliberately being attacked, not just in Wales, but also in North America, because the uniform was a symbol of authority and power. And the white working class at the time were very uncomfortable about this. And many of these Black men brought back their revolvers as well, because revolvers were allowed to be brought back. So this is just to give you an image of what was taking place in Britain at the turn of the 20th century. And then you've got the dangerous work in 1917, what Black soldiers were engaged in. Okay, stacking shells in the German bombardment. They risked their lives. Even during the First World War, no one talks about the amount of ships which were being blown out of the water, yeah, accompanied with Black men and women, mainly Black men, to feed Britain. These ships were being blown out of the water by Germans. So the reality is that we have always been put in subordinate and difficult positions in order to help the so-called mother country. Okay, a lot of these shells would explode in the faces and destroy the bodies of these men, and these families were not compensated. These people fought for the British West Indian Regiment, and the families where these accidents took place went with nothing back in the Caribbean islands. So this is a horrific treatment by a people, but the loyalty that these people had to come over and to help fight for the mother country, to help rebuild the mother country after the First World War, after the Second World War, is now being tested in the water, where the children and grandchildren of these people who fought in the First and the Second World War are now being deported back to places like Jamaica under the so-called Windrush scandal. When is this going to stop? Why is this disrespect taking place? Why is history being forgotten about these people? Even when they were subordinates, they had nothing. They still decided to help in the war effort and to come to rebuild the so-called mother country for people who were exploiting them and degrading them back in their own countries. Even Black women formed part of the West Indian Regiment as early as 1915. And many of them came and settled in places like Cardiff, spaces like Swansea. Okay, but Cardiff was the largest, you know, demography of mixed race people. When I mean mixed, I mean all different races. You know, we're not just talking about the black community, people which came from South America, people that came from East Africa, people that came from Arabia and all these other places, from Asia, Southeast Asia. It became an amalgam of different groups of people. And this is what created Welshness. Wales or Bhutan or Cardiff Bay is the only country in history that I have known. I've studied history from the beginning of time right to the contemporary, which actually shows an element of conviviality between different racial groups. You mean to tell me that this place, okay, which is no bigger than what, 6 miles in radius? Yeah, it housed over 200 different ethnic groups and races, you know, tribes and clans, etc. And they live in a convivial manner with one another for over 100 years. There's no historical legacy. When they went to Australia, New Zealand, we don't see that. They segregated the age. When Welsh and English and Scottish people went to America, they did exactly the same. They did exactly the same when they went to the Caribbean islands. So Wales is the only country, really, from a historical perspective, which can actually show that multiculturalism can work. It hasn't worked nowhere else in the way it's worked in Bhutan in Cardiff. And this is something I want to emphasize when we're looking at multiculturalism, conviviality, modern society, a pluralistic society, as far as we are living in today. So let's have a look at, let me just touch upon the race riots. So soldiers are returning back, conflict takes place. These are the three areas in Wales in 1919 when the soldiers returned back by almost giving their lives to the British Empire. Locals want to take their lives now. And what happened? Unemployment started to increase. It wasn't just white workers which were affected by the lack of boom industry that was taking place locally, but black workers as well. Over a thousand white men at the time in Cardiff riot attacked this particular enclave for nearly 4 days. Three people died as a result of that. Cardiff's then a race riot took place. Okay, and also in Newport. So what you have in Wales, you have three distinctive areas where black men specifically were being attacked. More attacked if they were seen with white women, because there was more black men that came to Wales than black women. So the emphasis here that when you're dealing with conflict and you're dealing with a lack of resources, etc., there's always some community that is used as an scapegoat. For someone else's misery and pain. And unfortunately, during this time, it was darker skinned people. So these are just some of the local history I think we need to understand that, you know, there were certain attacks coming by where these soldiers were being disrespected by locals. A lot of these men went to defend these same people who are now attacking them. This is hypocrisy. So we look at the Windrush generation. So in 1948, the Nationality Act was passed. This is when the British government decided to allow free movement of workers from the Commonwealth, not just the Caribbean islands, not just from Canada, not from Australia, New Zealand, not just from South India, not those places in Southeast Asia, not places in Central America, okay? And then this just goes on and on. All then constituted the Commonwealth of Britain. The first Commonwealth, which was established, was in Britain itself. Wales, the nation of Wales and Scotland became part of the Commonwealth. And then later on in the Cromwell, it was Northern Ireland, which became part of that, you know, which became known as United Kingdom. The United Kingdom was a Commonwealth. Once they were able to consolidate power within the British Isles, they were able to diffuse into other areas and to consolidate those geographical locations into what we now know as the Commonwealth. Okay, and in 1962, the Commonwealth Immigration Act to reduce the amount of black settlers here because the amount of conflict and contention was taking place. But the reality is that these people were brought over here to rebuild Britain, to rebuild the economy, and to rebuild the infrastructure of this country after what the Germans did. So these are just some images. I'm not going to read through this because I want to leave a bit of time for questions and answers. But these are just some images. You got black children there, black women coming over here. Many of them were single, okay, coming over to work, bringing their children. Some of these children now are being affected because many of them get passports at a certain time when Britain was changing things. And now they're being sent back to a country where they were born, but they know nothing about. And this is unfortunate. This is how Britain is treating its people who came to help them and assist them in the First World War, the Second World War, the post-war era, to rebuild the infrastructure of this country, because the men in this country were demoralized, felt that it was beneath them to do the work, like sweeping the streets, sweeping their own streets that they were dirty in. They don't want to sweep it. We have to acknowledge this. They didn't even want to become bus drivers. Okay? This is where a lot of dark-skinned people were coming over here. And when they wouldn't treat many of the black people been living here since the turn of the century, many white doctors refused. They had to send for African doctors to come over here to be trained as doctors so darker-skinned people in places like Liverpool can go and be treated, because white doctors and hospitals wouldn't treat dark-skinned people before the First World War in this country. So we have to understand the massive amount of doctors which come out to places like Kenya, which is part of the British Empire, may I remind you, and places like Nigeria, to study medicine and to, for them to stay on here to treat the dark skin and the mixed race or half caste people of this country. This is how the health service was. It was very unequal in this country. And that, inequalities existed even after 1948, where lonely black women were working in the hospitals, but yet they couldn't even see their own doctor when they were ill. And the other thing I want to emphasize this was that when black women came over here, they were working, there was a dual working household. Black women worked in the employment sector, the labor market, alongside their husbands, okay, and looked after their children at the same time. Black women been doing this for nearly five centuries on the plantations, working as domestic servants, working in the fields, and raising their children. For white women, this has only happened in the last 20 years. Every single black woman at this time, over 98% of black women worked in full-time employment in this country from 1948 right up until 1990, okay? And then we start to see a low, slow surge of British women going into the labor market. Okay, that's why they were here, that's why they were over here. They were not entitled to welfare, even though the welfare state was passed in 1948 and National Health Service was passed in 1948. Black people were not allowed to have access to these two institutions. They were here to work, to rebuild the infrastructure and to rebuild institutions after the Second World War. And many of them had studied as teachers, and in Wales, many of them who had teaching qualifications, Welsh schools refused to admit them to employ to teach white children. They had to become nurses. Many of them were secretaries. Many of them were accountants, couldn't work in these posts. The vast majority of black women who were educated back in the Caribbean islands could not utilize their profession within this country. Even though white women who grew up in the Caribbean islands alongside them did the same PGCEs, the same teaching qualifications with these black women, because who was accrediting these teaching qualifications in places like Barbados and Trinidad and Jamaica, and St. Kitts and Grenada and St. Lucia? Who was accrediting these teaching qualifications in the Caribbean islands? The British. So how come these women who did a British qualification in the Caribbean islands couldn't get into British schools after 1945? We don't see the admittance of black teachers in this country until as early as the 1960s. So there was racial segregation in this country. So this is something I want us to understand of the raw deal that these women had suffered when they came here. Their children being ridiculed when they sent them to school. Yeah, what the type of hardships they would have had in particular areas that they themselves would have lived. And this is something I feel that which is lost, why the Windrush generation narrative needs to come out. These women worked so hard, they didn't have time to become authors and to write books, etc. So it's our jobs as recipients of this information to record these things and to make sure that the next generation sees what their great-grandparents did or great-great-grandparents did in order to work, not just for the war effort of the First and the Second World War, but also how they came over here to build the social, political, and economic infrastructure of this country. So yeah, I'm just talking about nurses. Many of them were trained as nurses, and then a lot of them became like the dog's body. They were there basically, even though they were trained to be qualified nurses, I think it was auxiliary nurses they wanted to push them into, emptying the bedpans of patients and just feeding them and all these other type of things. Black women within the nursing profession literally got together to fight against this because they were full-time workers. The children were being brought up on their own. You ask most African Caribbean people of my generation, we never saw our parents. So we know a Jew working household where mother and father works at the same time don't benefit our upbringing. And this is what it does. We've been doing it for 5 centuries and we haven't benefited from it. So having a working mum and dad simultaneously, who's looking after the children? This is something which needs to be understood. This is something which has not been recorded in this country. Okay, and this is why the family is eroded to a large extent within the Black community, because Black women came over here, they work full time and they had children. Sometimes they were holding down 2-3 jobs at the same time in order to move out of depressed communities so they can buy their own homes. They started off partners where there were 60 or 70 or 100 of them would pool their money together to buy houses. And this is how they had to survive, because they were denied loans in banks, even though they were paying taxes and they were paying stamp in order to pay into the National Health Service, which they were not receiving the benefits. They weren't recipients of those benefits. So just to finish up on this, I'm going to ask questions, but the Race Relations Act, which was the major act which was passed in 1965, was because of racial segregation in this country. And this is one of the problems where they like to focus on America, racial segregation in the so-called South. They had the same thing here. Black people could not go to hotels, restaurants. They couldn't get public houses. They were not allowed to go into theaters and dance halls, swimming pools, and on public transportation, they would even deny. Even though they could drive buses and they could be bus conductors, there was a lot of problems for them to get on the bus, especially if the conductor or the driver was not Black. White conductors and bus drivers would refuse them entry. And we know what took place in Bristol. There was even a little strike in Cardiff, which doesn't get talked about, where Black people can drive the buses in Cardiff, but they couldn't become passengers. This is the type of hypocrisy which came, and that is why the Race Relations Act of 1965 was passed. So let me just finish up on this. Just look at some modern culture. So Black people's been living over here, and then this is Desmond Dekker and the Aces. This was the first number one hit that came out of Jamaica in Britain in 1969. So music is now going to become an influential factor and a political factor for dark-skinned people in this country. And then you had the likes of Bob Marley, the politicized. He knew the cries of the people in this country and used biblical texts and look at the oppression of the old in order to devise some sort of rhetoric or some sort of poetic justice for the people of this country. And this is why he was so famous. And just to finish off, this is an article where Bob Marley tops Cardiff event. Bob Marley actually came to Wales to Cardiff himself. Okay, this is important here in order to address the large Jamaican or even West Indian community that was living in Wales. And this image on the right-hand side was the first time that the Wailers were not called Bob Marley and the Wailers, it was called the Wailers in 1973. I remember seeing this as a young child, seeing Black people on television. This was about 10 o'clock at night. And this had a powerful effect on me. And this is where they sung Concrete Jungle and Steer It Up. And this in itself really, really revolutionized something within inside me, you know, about our place in this world, and that we probably now will be considered through a different lens through the media. So I'll end my presentation there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Abu Bakr. That was incredible. It's completely blown my mind, I just have to say. I had no idea about the connections of Black people in Welsh history going back to prehistoric times. And honestly, you know, just speaking from a personal note, I really identify and really enjoy a lot of Welsh history and British history, and often feel like I don't belong and I'm not part of it, being mixed race. And it's really already made me feel more rooted. It's such important work, and I can't thank you enough for that.